2016 Board of Adjustment meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Clitheroe?
Here.
Mr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Gerard?
Here.
Ms. John?
Here.
Okay, could I have a motion and a second for the approval of the agenda?
Move to accept the agenda.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The November 8, 2016 minutes were distributed to the members of the board. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? Hearing none, could I have a motion and a second for approval?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Would the clerk please swear in the staff?
Swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
It's been a long time, hasn't it?
Has.
Okay. So first order of business, we have received requests to continue cases 1937, 1938, 1939, and 1942. Those were all to the February 14th, 2017 Board of Adjustment meeting. We can approve all four if the board so desires in one vote.
Well, I move we accept the all four motions to table.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded, and we can do this on a voice vote. Is that correct?
Correct.
Motion has been made and seconded to continue those four cases, 1937, 1938, 1939, and 1942, to the February 14th, 2017 meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Okay, so that leaves us with first case tonight is case number 1936, a request by OTA Properties, LLC, for variances to the front yard setback requirement by allowing the existing nonconforming building to encroach into the required front yard setback, to the yard requirement by allowing the open paved terrace to extend more than 10 feet into the required front yard setback, and to the minimum off-street parking spaces required by allowing fewer off-street parking spaces than required on property located at 600 and 602 Fay Street. That looked like what I was supposed to read, but it's not. I get everything in there? Yes. So, has the notice been properly advertised?
Yes.
Has the property been posted with a notice of public hearing?
Yes.
Have the parties in interest been notified?
Yes.
Have there been any inquiries?
No.
Would the person making application to the board please come forward and state your name and address and be sworn in?
Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Good evening. My name is Phoebe Lamar. I have offices at 111 South 9th Street. I'm here this evening on behalf of OTA Properties, LLC. My client is seeking three variances this evening. Specifically, there are variances with regard to the front yard setback, the distance into the front yard that a terrace can project, and with regard to the number of parking spaces required. To be a little bit more specific, my client is looking to retain, but to renovate and change the use of the building that's currently located at 600 Fay Street. The existing building already crosses the building line in its current location, and as a result, in order to renovate rather than removing the building, a variance is needed for the front yard setback. Similarly, there is currently a loading dock that's on the front of the building. The plan would be to replace the loading dock with a patio, and the remainder of the existing pavement in front of that area will be removed and replaced with green space. Taking all of this into consideration, even with the replacement of the loading dock with a patio, the amount of paved area in front of the building will actually be reduced substantially, and the buffer area between the street and the building will be more attractive than it has been previously. Finally, my client is seeking a variance with regard to the number of parking spaces required on site. Specifically, with the uses proposed, the current ordinance would require a minimum of 48 spaces, but the proposed plan would include 40 spaces. There are a couple of reasons that this request makes sense. First, the uses that my client anticipates having in the location would be generally complementary as far as parking requirements. The office space, for example, would require more parking typically during the day, whereas the restaurant use that is causing there to be an increase in the number of parking spaces that are needed would be mostly around the lunch and dinner time, which would be the time when the office space would require the least parking. Moreover, the number of parking spaces that are included in the plan actually complies with the minimum number of spaces that would be required under the UDC that is likely slated for approval after the first of the year. Given the desire to renovate rather than to remove the current building, there are practical difficulties and unnecessary hardships in carrying out the strict letter of the ordinance. The building currently on the site is in excess of 40 years old, and in its current location makes it impossible to now meet the current code. With regard to the setbacks, meeting the current code regarding the parking spaces with the building in this location is also impossible, although the changes coming down in the new code sometime this year will actually result in this building likely being in compliance if this variance is approved. Even with the variances, my client is substantially complying with the zoning ordinance and observing the spirit of the zoning ordinance. The building will have more buffer and green space following the redevelopment than currently exists. And the complementary uses of the site will result in the parking that's going to be provided being sufficient to meet the needs that are going to be there. My client actually spoke with the board for the North Central Columbia Neighborhood Association, and I believe you actually are going to hear from him this evening that they are in support of this proposal. My client, Bobby Campbell, Matt Crete from Engineering Surveys and Services, and I are all happy to answer any questions that you may have about this proposal.
Questions?
I have one question. Is there any parking available on the street?
There is some parking available on the street, but actually this building should have sufficient parking even with the parking spaces that are being proposed.
And what did the North Central Board?
They were in support of the proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak in favor of the application?
Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do. I think I was supposed to say my name first, but Matthew Crudy, offices at 1113 Fay Street, and I'm civil engineer on the project. First, I just wanted to let you know I'm available to answer any questions you might have. I think Phoebe's done a good summary on this as well. Did want to highlight, too, on the setback, on the front yard setback, that the face of the building will be placed with a new facade on it. Currently, it's a metal building, and there will be some improvements to that. That will cause a little additional encroachment into the setback as well, but I wanted to be clear on that point. Otherwise, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yes. And mainly just to clarify what you're asking for so we can write it out the right way. So is it a 19-feet patio extension? So is it really an extension of 9 feet, or is it 10 feet because the building kind of clicks over the line a little?
Well, because the building clicks over the line, it is further. Effectively, the terrace is extending about 19 feet into the yard. So it would be, 9 foot would be allowed, so we're,
right.
You know,
so it's an extra 10 is what, yeah, I was trying to get at.
Yes, okay. Yes.
That was the only thing I think I really wanted to help clarify for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Or tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do. Good evening. My name is Dan Cullimore. I live at 715 Lyon Street. I'm the president of the board of directors for the North Central Columbia Neighborhood Association. What you're receiving now is a statement of our support for this project. After meeting with the applicant and his attorney on November 15th, the board of directors voted to support the application before you today, case 1936, for the variances as described earlier. NCCNA supports commercial development and redevelopment within this section of the association boundaries, especially when the business is proposing to repurpose an existing building. The association finds the merits of this particular request include, one, the existing building has had a non-conforming setback for years without doing harm to neighboring properties, and requiring conformity will be a hardship to any new business development, and would likely require demolition of the existing structure, at least to some extent. Number two, a more public use of the front yard and terrace as proposed by OTA Properties will be a benefit to the area by increasing the number of eyes on the street, a well-known crime deterrent. And three, there is adequate parking within the immediate environments of the Faye Street location, and the proposed uses will not likely necessitate the required number of spaces according to code. The proposed redevelopment of the property at 600 and 602 Faye will complement the recent commercial renaissance along the Colt Corridor and further the association's longstanding vision for the area. Please vote in favor of the requested variance. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak in favor of the application? Anyone wishing to speak in opposition to the application? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Comments of staff?
I just wanted to point out that the, or just to add that the terrace, the open terrace in the front there, is actually a, while it's open, it's also a built structure. It's going to be about 3.5 feet above grade at the Faye Street side. To include that there will be an additional structure in the front yard.
That's the patio area?
That's correct. That patio is actually a raised patio.
Okay.
Perhaps. At least a guardrail, I would.
We'll leave that up to John. Okay. Any comments of legal?
It's practical difficulties. Obviously, there are certain things you consider. How substantial the request of the variance is, whether the variance is as a result of substantial change to the character of the neighborhood and creates substantial detriment to adjoining properties. Whether difficulties can be alleviated by some other method feasible for the applicant to pursue other than a variance, whether in light in the manner in which the difficulty arose and considering all relevant factors, the interests of justice will be served in granting the variance. I think those are good standards.
Okay. Comments? Discussion? Motion?
I move to approve the variances as requested.
Okay. So, do we need to specify? I'm trying to find where the request is. I think the request was for less than the required number of spaces. I know, but would that need to be noted as 40?
And I had one question for staff about okay. that, and forgive my ignorance of the zoning code. I don't usually do this a lot, but I wasn't sure. On the four bicycle, are those one-to-one in this instance? They are. Thank you, Amy. So as long as that was correct, then I think you could say that that was the right number.
Okay. And then you want something included about the
I think you want to grant them an extra 10 feet
an
for the patio.
Extra 10 feet for the patio.
Unless they really think it's something more than that and you need a further one.
Well, now, I just want to make sure.
And the non-conforming, existing non-conforming encroaches 2 feet into the front yard, is that correct?
Yes. There's 3 total. 2 feet for the existing non-conforming encroachment of the building, 10 feet for the patio, and then only 40 spaces versus 47.8.
The dimension varies. I mean, it's not quite square to the property. So just for clarification, it's actually about 2'6" on one side. It's a little less than 2 feet on the other. So just so there's no...
2.5 feet?
Yeah, let's say 2.5 feet.
Oh, I'd rather be right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that will include that extra part of the facade. Is that correct? Okay. All right. So do we have all that included in the...
What did you say? Murder, Raptor.
Do we have all that included in the... Okay. We have a second? Okay, a motion has been made and second. Clerk, please call the roll.
Case number 1936 for all 3 variance requests. Mr. Clitheroe?
Yes.
Mr. Campbell?
Yes.
Ms. Hammond?
Yes.
Mr. Gerard?
Yes.
Ms. John?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. 1941, right?
Yes.
Okay, case number 1941. Notice is hereby given that the Board of Adjustment of the City of Columbia, Missouri will hold a public hearing at a meeting of said board and City Council chamber on the first floor of City Hall, 701 East Broadway in Columbia, Missouri at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, the 13th day of December, 2016, to give all interested persons an opportunity to appear and be heard in relation to the following appeal. Request of DRICA Columbia LLC, also known as Rice Columbia Property Owner LLC, owner, and Boone County Joint Communications tenant for a conditional use permit to allow up to 10 communication antennas on the roof of the building that are up to 22 feet in height above the roof of the building, and the maximum building elevation as required by sections 2923 and 2921.3. of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Columbia, County of Boone, State of Missouri, and further being described are located at 131 South 10th Street. Has the notice been properly advertised?
Yes.
Has the property been posted with a notice of public hearing?
Yes.
Have the parties of interest been notified?
Yes.
Have there been any inquiries?
No.
The person making application to the board, please come forward and state your name and address and be sworn in.
House.
Or tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing.
Address?
I'm County Councilor. I office at 801 East Walnut.
Good.
Good evening. I'm excited to be here with you tonight on this conditional use application. I want to pass out a quick article from 2002 from the New York Times as to why we're here. This request is about increasing in-building radio coverage for first responders. And as you may know, one of the first, the major set of first responders that died on 9/11 were the firefighters. And they've done a bunch of analysis on that. And the reason why, if you look at this article from the New York Times, 21 minutes before the North Tower collapsed, and after the South Tower had already collapsed, 2 helicopter pilots said, get everybody out of there. It's imminent. It's coming down. When they did a review as to why the firefighters didn't hear that order to evacuate, it was because their radio system failed, just as it had in those same buildings 8 years earlier during the response to the 1993 bombing at the World Trade Center. We have that same issue in downtown Columbia, what they call in-building radio coverage for first responders. These radios that the first responders can use on their hip and have the shoulder mics, they work out on the street. They don't work once you get inside. This opportunity for a public-private partnership became apparent to us at the county when at the design phase of the Rise apartment building. When it came to looking for high purchase to put first responder emergency communication antennas on, there wasn't much real estate in an ideal location downtown Columbia. As a matter of fact, from a radio propagation standpoint, you're going to hear more about that. The only other building that is even close is Paquin Tower, and all that real estate's taken with city antennas. So we had an opportunity at the design phase. Tonight you're also going to hear from Matt Creedy from ES&S, the expert from the last hearing, and you're going to hear from Dave Dunford, the county's emergency radio consultant. And they're going to tell you that this location is the best location in terms of topography for this sort of deployment of emergency radio antennas. Because we were able to get in a design phase, ES&S was also part of the design team for the actual building. And because we were able to get in at the design phase to pursue this public-private partnership, the developer was actually very gracious with us. We have a footprint inside the building for all of the equipment that makes these antennas function at no rent. And we're going to have a no-rent location on the roof for the antennas if this board approves the conditional use permit tonight. Dave Dunford, our radio consultant, who's going to talk after me, he's going to talk to you about these radio propagation Rorschach tests. And he's going to tell you why red in this instance is good and how with this deployment we're going to increase in-building radio coverage in the heart of downtown Columbia and on the north side of the MU campus. Assistant Chief Brad Frazier from the Columbia Fire Department has written a letter in support, should be in your packet, that supporting this application for the very reason I'm talking about recognizing the need for in-building radio coverage. The staff report supported the application with four conditions, and I can represent to you that we can accept those four conditions as recommended by the staff in connection with the CUP. After Mr. Dunford talks to you, then Mr. Creedy's going to talk to you about how these 3-inch collinear antennas are going to be affixed to the building. The reason we chose these collinear antennas, and Dunford can talk to you about that, is because they're the type of antenna that's typically deployed in severe polar weather environments. They're super resilient. They have 125 mile an hour wind rating, and Dunford, who's a radio consultant expert, he'll tell you that most cell phone towers rate for 95 miles an hour. So these are beefier and tougher than normal antennas. Mr. Creedy is going to tell you about how they're going to affix. These are not going to be affixed, if you approve it, to the roof. They're actually going to be affixed through the roof to the structural steel of this building. If you've seen the building, it's actually built with steel beams. These antennas are going to talk to those, are going to affix directly to the steel beams, and Mr. Creedy is going to be better than me to talk to you about it. But I have one thing I need to talk to you about a rule, inches. Mr. Creedy gave you several renderings of what these things would look like that are part of your packet. They're in his second filing, the city staff, with a letter dated November 17, 2016. And as a lawyer, there's two things about that make that not fairly representative of what actually happens, and I need to point that out to you. The antennas that we're asking for permission to install 10 of, but our initial deployment's going to be 8. That's what we're planning, but two more. For future expansion, are 3 inches in diameter. That's this. But when we did the renderings with ES&S, nothing showed up because these 3-inch antennas are sky blue in color, and when you render them with the Google map base map, nothing showed, so we would be showing you nothing. So he had to make two changes to what actually is going to happen with these antennas. He made them 9 inches in diameter, and he made them black in color. Okay, So I just want to point that out when you're looking at those renderings thinking, well, gosh, well, I'm going to be able to see it from here or not. Even with the renderings, you can barely see them. But he had to jack it up to 9 inches from the 3, and he had to change them from sky blue in color to black in color just for purposes of that demonstrative exhibit. So I just want to point that out. That's not exactly what he's going to look when it's all said and done. It's going to look less intrusive than that. We're really excited about the opportunity at the county to be able to provide this extra radio coverage for first responders. We think it's going to increase public safety and our public service, not just the firefighters. They're the primary ones, but also police that are entering into these buildings, and the radio coverage drops off as soon as they get inside the third door past the entrance. This is going to have a true positive impact on that. We're going to be able to move the needle. I'm happy to answer any questions. And next up is going to be Dave Dunford, our radio consultant.
Any danger with having these antennas up so high to anything flying or?
They are below the FAA regulated height, and so I don't believe so. They're 22 feet in height. The ordinances that staff has and staff directed us to this process. I wanted to mention that the ordinances that staff pointed out to us would have allowed 6 feet. So we're really talking about the difference between 6 and 22, or the 18 or feet. No, I'm doing my math wrong. 16 feet difference between the 6 that would have been allowed and the 22 that's going to actually be there. From an aerial perspective, if you're flying that close to downtown buildings, you're already probably in a problem.
I'm thinking of those hot air balloons, you know, and I never see them have accidents or try to land, but if they're so hard to see, is that going to, you know, I was just thinking, gosh, it's nice.
I don't think they fly that low over the city buildings.
Okay, so.
Didn't think about it. You asked me a question I wasn't prepared to answer about hot air balloons. Hadn't thought about that.
They're blue and you can't hardly see them. I was
taught that was going to be a plus because it's going to decrease the visual pollution that these things are.
Yeah.
But I didn't think about those hot air balloon enthusiasts. I don't think it's going to be an issue. And because of the way these things are rated, if the basket hit one wide, it'd probably just bend and bounce right back.
Any other questions for this? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Dave Dunford's going to speak to you now.
Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do. My name is Dave Dunford. I'm the radio consultant for, thank you, CJ, for County of Boone, and before that for many years had been the radio consultant for and worked with the City of Columbia since a long time ago. Been here about 13 years, so it was about 2003 when I started coming down. Have worked with the city on a variety of projects, and as Mr. Dykhouse alluded, this is a pretty good deal. It's an exciting deal. We were kind of put on notice about the event through the Columbia Fire Department. As an outsider, I live in the Kansas City area, you need to know that you have a really good deal here. This good deal comes about by virtue of the collaboration and cooperation of your first responders and your municipal agency heads. I've done radio projects in a lot of different places. I retired after 36 years from a small police department in the Kansas City area. And this is a unique situation. So kudos to the staffs, kudos to the managers. City and county police, fire, and EMS departments in the area. So Columbia Fire Department keyed us up on the development of this building. As Mr. Dykhouse mentioned, we got involved early, saw that this was a great opportunity. Again, as he mentioned and covered, all of the equipment that supports the radio system installation will be inside the building down on the second floor. The coaxial cables that feed these antennas come down through conduits provided as part of the building construction. Somebody had mentioned, or there was a question about the height of the antennas and low-flying balloons, for instance. The FAA and the FCC assume that there may be antennas 20 feet above the highest point of any structure, and that's posted as a notice, to airmen. So don't get within 20 feet because there could well be something that is unregulated and unregistered. When you add in the parapet on the building, we're still well below that 20-foot clearance for the FAA. Normally, for a routine antenna clearance, the magic number is 200 feet. 200 feet or above, it would be lighted and or marked. Let's talk a little bit about what CJ called the Rorschach or ink blot test. Have you got pictures of those in front of you? Okay. One is a picture of the we don't have the streets on here named. This one, that one, is the Grissom Building. That's a radio tower that's over at the City Public Works facility they call it the Grissom Building, on a 275-foot tower. This is predicted coverage from that tower into the downtown area. I bought a computer program many years ago to try and predict radio coverage. Like political polls, for instance, it's not 100% accurate either. So what we try and do is measure what is working today and correlate it to the predictions, adding or subtracting in the various factors. A big problem with the present operation of radio systems for public safety people in Boone County is that we're operating in a VHF band of channels. This channel has some good advantages, has some bad detriments. One of the detriments is when you get it into a building, when you get it into a concrete and steel structure, the coverage reduces quickly. Downtown Columbia and in the out-county areas, metal sheds, metal buildings, and metal-clad mobile homes all act the same way to just kill those radio signals. That means we can do one of two things. Move to a completely different system, which is not necessarily impossible, but more importantly, get more facilities, more radio facilities close to the radios themselves. So in our case, that means something downtown. We know that we have a problem with concrete buildings at MU. We know that we have problem with concrete buildings in downtown Columbia. The second photo, it's upside down. Yes, it is. That's okay. That's the projection of the rise. And as you can see, the red covers the downtown. The numbers may mean something to you. We calculated this at what would be named around a negative 50 dBm contour for red. And the yellow, there's a little bit of yellow, is around negative 90. That does not include the magic number being the difference between on-street and in-building coverage that CJ alluded to earlier. We know that in-building is going to be tough downtown because of the concrete structures. So that's why we have kind of been looking around for something downtown. At present, the city owns a structure we call the White Pole. It is a white-colored pole-type antenna that's right behind the police station. It can't support the weight and the load of the equipment that we need to accomplish these tasks downtown. We also looked at the prospect of using the Paquin Tower, and it's full up. It's a great facility because it's one of the highest places in town. But unfortunately, the tenant spaces are all occupied by commercial carriers. So that kind of brought us back to this. The antennas we're proposing to use are as low profile and non-obtrusive as we could come up with. They're a fiberglass whip. You've probably seen them. It just looks like a giant long soda straw. These happen to be light blue in color. They flex in the wind slightly and sustain the high winds very well. What's bad about them is they don't do well with lightning. Mr. Lightning comes to visit, it can damage the antennas. What's good about them is they're easy to work with in the wind because as they move slowly back and forth, further deflection in the high wind, they'll shed off any ice accumulation. So they're a low-maintenance antenna until Mr. Lightning comes to visit. With the height being comparatively low here, we think it'll be fine. They're also less unattractive than the metal antennas that have all the bow ties on them. So that's how we kind of came to recommend this. They're well, I don't want to steal Matt's thunder. They are rigidly attached. We have contracted with a commercial engineer to put together a system that's going to hold these onto the building, we hope, through even a real heavy storm and a debris field that might build up. Really, I think that's all I have, unless anybody has any questions.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for your consideration. I appreciate it.
Can you swear in again? Okay.
Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you.
Again, I'm Matthew Crudy. I'm the civil engineer on this project, offices at 1113 Faith Street. Again, I think we've talked a lot of portions of this antenna. I want to talk a bit focused on the structure of it. Again, you're looking at a fiberglass pole. You know, it's 22 foot tall, and it's anchored, as I mentioned, through the roof. It'll be bolted through. There'll be an anchor on the at the roof level, bolted through the roof, through the concrete, into the structural steel. Where there's not a structural beam, there will be a beam added. You know, so this will be anchored through. You're not worried about concrete breaking. We're worried about breaking the structure of the building. As I understand this, you know, you're looking at that structure holding the antenna. At a failure of the antenna is about 40% of its failure capacity or its structural capacity. So, you know, it's much beefier even than the antenna itself. So very little concern with that. And these are a custom engineered system to this particular antenna, to this particular application. We're not trying to pull something off the shelf and make it fit and make it work. You know, it is made to work in this environment. Also, I want to highlight from an equipment standpoint, the location of this, the closet. You know, if you've ever seen the rooftop unit where you've got the equipment sitting on the roof, and there's a door and there's a little building or a little shed sitting on top. Well, that's inside this building in this case. Having this opportunity to work from the beginning and from the ground up here has allowed that opportunity. So you want to access it, well, you're just going to be inside the garage. Again, secured, locked. You know, it's not going to be open by any means to the public. And with all the conduits and all the wiring that has to go up to these antennas, it's internal to the building. Whereas if you retrofitted an existing building or structure, you're placing all that conduit on the exterior where it's visible. So again, everything's screened. It's hidden from view, and what you have left is simply these 3-inch antennas that you have visible. And then lastly, just touch on the rendering as well. You talked about having to increase the size of the antenna and the color so it wouldn't show up. But everything again is to scale. It was using Google Earth as a base map, and the renderings they created that get relatively good heights on buildings and get some tree cover and such, and give you really about the best perception and perspective you can. All what you see is either at eye level or on the top floor of the structure that you've seen, like in Paquin Towers, you're looking out of the top window of that building. And again, everything now is to scale. The building's to scale. The antennas are to scale, with the exception of the diameter and the color. So I think it gives you the best perspective of what you're going to see out there. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Nope. Won't say anything. Thank you, Matt. Anyone else wishing to speak in favor of the application? Anyone wishing to speak in opposition to the application? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Comments of staff?
As the applicant has stated, this is a unique opportunity for us to have been on the ground floor, so to speak, with the opportunity to be able to incorporate the communication antenna into the actual design of this structure. As the staff report lays out, there are 4 conditions of approval. Those are generally very standard conditions as they relate to the maximum height, the maximum number, the actual physical location of those antennas, given the acknowledgement by the applicant's engineer in their certified letter as it relates to where that fall zone is. We are wanting to much limit any additional opportunity for creating any safety hazards that may be created beyond what currently, based on the design of this building, exists. As the staff report points out, the code is silent as it relates to antenna falling into a public right-of-way. It is very clear, as the staff report pointed out, what happens when an antenna or a tower would collapse or fall onto a residentially used or residentially zoned property. So We acknowledge, and as the applicant has pointed out and the engineers, there is a parapet. This antenna while it will have deflection associated with it, if it were to fail, the parapet, as the applicant's engineers have stated, would capture that antenna, thereby ensuring that it stays on the roof. Information presented this evening that we were unaware of, based on the details of the design of the antenna system, was that it would be anchored through the roof structure to structural steel internal to the building. Given that additional information, that is something worthy of the board's consideration as it relates to the strengthening of an antenna in this particular location. Generally, with standard monopole construction, you have what is referred to as a caisson that is normally situated generally anywhere between 15 to 20 feet below grade, which is what keeps that antenna intact and upright during adverse weather conditions. Basically, the structural reinforcement by going through a roof surface and tying it into the structural steel of the building, which is then obviously embedded in the ground, probably provides for a similar safety aspect with the antennas themselves. I would tend to agree that the graphics that were presented, they were almost unperceptible to be able to see. Given the scale of this building as it relates to the downtown, the locations of the antenna, the color, and their actual projection above the roof surface, I would be confident to indicate that without an elevated perch, you will very unlikely be able to see these antenna in the immediate downtown environment. You very well may be able to, however, as you proceed further away from downtown based on our elevation differences that we have in our locations that surround downtown from grade. But definitely looking from taller elevated structures where you have that perched view, these will be apparent. But they will be no more apparent than any other antenna that we have already sitting on top of rooftops within the downtown, which is a permissible activity. I believe that the review, as stated within the staff report, and the conditions of the findings that we have for compliance with Section 29-21.3 are supportive of the board's action to recommend approval of the antenna and allow for this opportunity to be executed between both the city, the county, and the property owner.
Okay. Comments illegal.
So this is a little bit of an unusual thing, because what you really have is that the tower is actually the building structure itself, and the antennas are connected to that tower. And so this in our code is the best way we can design to try to do that is this conditional use permit. And so the first section talks about what happens to be in the permit application. And I think that the engineer did a great job of laying that out for you to meet each of these criteria. Because you're supposed to consider to make sure the application was complete and it fulfilled those criteria. And I think staff had noted in their report that that was all met by the engineer's report. Right, Pat?
That is correct, sir.
So then in the second part of it is that it says, in rendering your decision on conditional use permit request, the Board of Adjustment shall consider the following. And I think I'm going to go through these really briefly, as fast as I can, but I think I want you to listen to each of those and think about the different testimony you've heard before and whether or not that was met, because that's what you're supposed to be weighing out. So there's A through H. Whether or not an existing towers are located within the geographic area necessary to meet the applicant's engineering requirements, whether or not the existing towers and structures and buildings within the applicant's required geographic area are sufficient height to meet the engineering requirements, whether or not the existing towers or structures have sufficient structural strength to support the applicant's proposed antennas, whether or not the fees, costs, and other contractual terms required by the owners of the existing towers, structures, or buildings within the required geographic area of the applicant or retrofit the existing towers or structures are reasonable, whether or not there are limiting conditions that render existing towers or structures or buildings within the applicant's required geographic area unsuitable, whether or not the proposal minimizes the number and size of towers or structures that will be required in the area, whether or not the applicant has previously failed to take advantage of the availability of shared use opportunities of this section or otherwise, and whether or not the applicant has provided sufficient evidence indicating that the tower will be made available for use by others or subject to reasonable technical limitations and feasible terms. So I think they did a very good job of trying to address each one of those things of saying why they couldn't use something else, where it couldn't be used, why this is unique to the structure and how it's attached, But obviously, if you have questions on any of those things, now's the time to go ahead and ask them to come up and say, hey, I had a question about this particular factor. Can you answer it for me?
Okay. Questions? Unlike that.
All right. Then I think there's one more set of requirements, general requirements. I know this is a little tedious, but I think it's the right thing to do. Also, the general requirements talk about after December 15th, 1997, that you have to also comply with these, and that regulatory compliance. All antennas and towers shall meet or exceed the current standards and regulations by the FAA, FCC, and any other state and federal agency with the authority to regulate communication towers and antennas. Such standards and regulations should be amended. And then the owner shall bring such device and structures into compliance with the revised standards and regulations within a time period mandated by a controlling agency. And I think they tried to address that when you were talking about the aerial pieces. Security, that all antennas and towers would be protected from unauthorized access by the appropriate security devices. And the description of the proposed security measures shall be provided as part of the applicant to install, build the antennas or towers. Additionally, the measures shall be required to deem necessary by the board adjustment in the cases of the use permit. This is all going to be interior to their building. And then on top of the building, so I think that shows their security measures that they have in mind. One is on lighting, that the antennas and towers shall not be lighted unless required by the FAA or other state or federal agency and regulation, in which case the description of the required lighting scheme would be made part of the application to install, build, alter the antenna or tower, and strobe lights shall not be used unless the FAA or other state and federal agency and or authority were regulated. And my understanding is those strobe lights aren't required and that there is no other lighting. Advertising, that the placement of advertising structure regulated by this section is prohibited, and there's no advertising associated with this. And the height, and this is the critical one, and one of the reasons I was trying to get through all this, is that the height of the tower shall be governed by the underlying zoning district. However, when rendering its decision on conditional use permit for a new tower, which is what this is, the Board of Adjustment may increase the height as it deems appropriate. And so one of the things that they're asking is that you increase that height level to allow for that extra whippet distance, and I think the total was 14 extra feet. Is that correct?
16.
Sorry, I apologize. So that's one of the things I think you need to find in your decision is that you're going to go ahead and say we're going to grant that extra 16 feet for each one of these whippets with the other conditions that staff has also said.
One of the conditions that staff has included.
So thank you. Sorry about that. And then the design, and finally, the tower shall be maintained a galvanized steel finish subject to the requirements of the FAA or applicable state federal agency, or painted in neutral colors consistent with the natural built environment of the site. Obviously, in this case, the tower itself is not galvanized. It's the steel structure, and then they are painting the whippets to match the site, which I think meets the desire of the overall piece of this code. And then the equipment, shelters, cabinets, guy wires shall be screened from view by a permanent screening structure, a masonry wall, wood, fence, landscape material, or a combination thereof, at least 8 feet high, and required screening. Shall have an opacity of 80% year-round if landscaping is used, 80%, an 8-foot minimum height shall be achieved within 4 growing seasons. All this equipment is going to be actually on the inside of the building, so I don't think we have an issue there. All towers shall meet the setback requirements, the yard requirements of applicable zoning district. In addition, all towers shall separate from any off-site residential structure in the boundary residential zone property and the distance equal to the height of the tower. But what we're talking about, which was Pat was addressing earlier with the fall zones, is the amount of the whippet, obviously not the building structure itself. I don't believe it has any ground anchors or guy wires that is in the next criteria. The on-site parking, I think, was addressed in the memo where it said that they would provide a space for someone to come in and maintenance. Is that correct? I remembered right. And then again, the cabinets are going to be interior to the building, and the material and equipment which is not direct support of the antenna shall not be stored in the shelter. So those are all the different criteria you're supposed to find. If you have any other questions about those criteria, I'd like you to ask them.
In the first criteria of the second set,
yes.
Is there something about if they have to make any changes, they have to come back for a variance?
So I think what this is meaning is if the federal government or some other regulatory agency says, hey, you know what we found is the hot air balloons really are dangerous and we're going to go ahead and say you have to lower them, that they would have to comply with that as well. I think that's just saying you have to comply with all these other things and as if they even change, and that that is a part of passing this. That's what I think.
Other questions? Or a motion? Okay. Be recommending here a conditional use permit. I make a motion that we approve the request for the conditional use permit with the four recommendations by staff. The maximum number of antennas shall not exceed 10. The antenna shall be no greater than 3 inches in diameter. Maximum height of the antenna shall not extend more than 22 feet above the roof surface of the RISE apartment building from base to antenna tip. The antenna shall be placed no closer to the roof building edge parapet than shown on the site plan prepared by Engineering Surveys and Services dated November 17, 2016.
Second that.
Motion has been made and seconded. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Case number 1941, Mr. Clitheroe?
Yes.
Mr. Campbell?
Yes.
Ms. Hammond?
Yes.
Mr. Gerard?
Yes.
Ms. John?
Yes.
Request has been approved. Anything else the board would like to discuss? And
taking a new position.
Oh, that's right.
January.
Probably the last time I see you guys.
Well,
at least hopefully.
Best of luck to you, Kavanaugh. Yes, that's true. Well, I will adjourn the meeting.
Too cool.